Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What is going on, guys? It's Knife Talk, podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers. You know the drill. We're here every week to answer your questions, to hang out, dilemmas, feedback, whatever you want. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. Here with me is Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts and the great Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. We do this every week, ladies and germs, and you know all about it. Guys, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Spooky, eh?
All Hallows Eve.
Yeah, it's Halloween. Well, we're recording on Halloween, but that doesn't, for the listener, it's not Halloween.
Yeah. So everybody had a safe Halloween, no accidental drugging or razor blades in your candy bars.
What?
Yeah, that was a thing in the 80s. At this day and age, you never know. In the 80s, there were these stories of like sickos putting like pins and razor blades in candy bars.
Like candied apples and shit like that.
Don't take unwrapped food and all this. So it was like, it was also like, it could have been like propaganda from parents so they could chop up, so they would cut the candy up to make sure there wasn't anything weird in it.
So they get the candy.
Take a taste, you know? So gotcha. There was a lot of that, so.
Oh, wow.
I think that was debunked recently.
It was debunked. But I do remember trick-or-treating and spending the night at a friend's house when I was very young, and the parents were like divvying up all the candy and chopping it up, and I was just like, oh my God, I gotta get chopped up little candies. It sucks.
But it's Halloween here, and obviously with the time difference, it's the evening here, so it's already dark. And I'm stuck here in the UK on my own. And there's been a few trick-or-treaters already at the door. And there was one if I need to leave, it's because there's somebody at the door. Right. So there's one sort of 10, 15 minutes ago, knock on the door, I open the door, and there's a bunch of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds. They had a parent behind them as well. So, you know, they say trick-or-treat, and you... I got this cauldron of sweets, and I kind of give them the, or candy as you'd call it, give them the cauldron. And this little girl scooped up so much. I was just like, oh, wow, you scooped up a lot there, and laughed. She looked me dead in the eye with this little witch's hat on, and also she said, I've been growing my hands especially for tonight.
That is awesome.
That's so hilarious.
So, yeah, it's quite cool just looking out the window and seeing all these kids up and down the street and so on, all dressed up. It's quite nice.
See, an answer like that is worth the hand grab.
Oh, completely. I was just like, yep, you take them. Exactly.
In our neck of the woods, it was hard because we used to take our daughter trick-or-treating. But when you take them trick-or-treating, you can't really man the door at our house. So we would leave a jack-o'-lantern, a plastic jack-o'-lantern, filled with candy with a note saying, take one. every year somebody would just take the, they thought take one was take the whole fucking jack-o'-lantern. So my kid, when she was very young, she would be like, where's the jack-o'-lantern? And someone would be like, we have to tell her, break it to her, that somebody just took the whole fucking thing. Yeah. And she was crestfallen because it was like a total, it was like they stole from her. She was very upset about it. So
yeah.
Right. We had to like figure out a different way. But I mean, yeah, in our neck of the woods, I mean, they take everything.
Faith
yeah.
in humanity gone down real fucking quick in that moment.
So bad. So bad. So.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I'm here on my own, and Amy really doesn't like scary films. So tonight, yeah, I'm going to get a pizza and I'm going to watch a scary film and, yeah, it's going
to
be
good. Well, you are quite demented in terms of like the stuff you like to watch and listen to.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do think. I mean, everything. I mean, you've scarred some of our listeners.
You've been listening to that podcast that I mentioned last
week. I have not. You sent me on to one of your red-handed podcasts, and yeah. I was like, I had started getting heart palpitations. It was so ghoulish. And then we've gotten listener feedback saying, never listen to... You know, I couldn't sleep for days after Craig's recommendation of so-and-so. You have a rep as having a demented taste in music and or podcasts and movies. So
what's God on the docket for tonight?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's just going to be a Netflix, see what's recommended kind of thing. Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
What are you up to for Halloween, Mareko?
The kid has, what is it, one of the classmates from school. They're a local business owner, and they decided to invite the second and fourth grade classes to come over and hang out whenever they like over a 5 hour period.
What happened to third graders?
They can get fucked.
Oh, jeez, easy.
No, they got two kids.
Sweating a little bit here, Jesus.
They got two kids, and one's in second grade, and one's in fourth grade. So
got it.
So they just kind of focus on those ones. But yeah, so we're probably gonna go there. It's supposed to be raining most of the evening. Usually we go. Sarah's got family that's like just a few blocks from here. But it's all outdoor stuff, like walking up and down the street. And it's the neighborhood that Sarah grew up in. So it's like seeing old neighbors and all that shit. But it's supposed to be pissing rain. And we have zero interest in just standing around in the rain. So we're not going to do that. We're probably just going to go to this little house party thing and then call it a night. Victor actually isn't really into sweets. Like he likes the idea of collecting them and gathering them and getting them and stuff. But then he just doesn't like, he's not really into eating them.
Right.
He's still got tons of candy left over from last year.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. Jeez.
And Easter and Christmas and all the
oh
fucking
God.
Shit.
Oh, my God.
My kids are like, locusts. If they see the tin open and they're like locusts, they're like, straight in there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. But otherwise, just, what is it? Oh, knife-wise, I just posted up my Devil Skull Damascus pattern. That is a collaboration with Gabe Fletcher of Anchorage Forge and myself. He basically posed the challenge to see if I could design a devil's skull out of mosaic Damascus, and especially like just kind of more traditional pattern welded elements. Of course, you know, people have been doing powdered stuff for a long time, and people are now using 3D printing and powdered steel to make design elements. And then there are other people who do, like, they'll forge out Damascus like straight layers or W's or something, and then they'll cut it into different shapes or forge it into different shapes and kind of puzzle things together. But I'm just using like straight up conventional forge welding and pattern manipulating techniques to put a bunch of rectangles and squares back together to create the design. Wow. It came out pretty well, and it's been a pretty positive response to it, which is cool. And
I saw the pictures today on the your newsletter email that went out. And it's just like, wow, that's super impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty sick in person. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, so that's really exciting to get that finally posted up, because this has been a project that's probably been close to a year.
Wow.
Year on... In the process of getting it to this point. So Gabe has the knives now. He's getting pictures of them. And then I was actually talking to Steve Schwarzer about maybe trying to do a write-up somewhere about them. So we'll see what happens. But I'm excited to be done with it.
Yeah. Are they sort of taken care of, or will they be available? Or
Mine presently is available. There have been a couple inquiries, but it officially goes for sale in like tomorrow morning. So by the time this comes out, it hopefully will not be there anymore. And it's always a feeling. It's like, is it going to go? Is it not? And so, yeah. But yeah, that's been good. Otherwise, just regular knife stuff. Cool. Yeah. Cool. What about you, Jeff?
Well, I went...
Oh, sorry. Craig.
Craig.
So I was just going to say what we did this week. So we went on a ceramics course, a pottery course. And I've got to say, it was the most fun ever. It was amazing. So yeah, a few hours. And it was just me, myself and my wife on the course with a guy called Matthew Jones. He's Matt Jones Ceramics on Instagram. And he does this course, you know, where people go in and you learn how to basically throw on a wheel. And it is so much fun. So much that I've gone down this big, as you expected.
I bet.
Gone down this huge rabbit hole of all the YouTube videos I could consume. And we've ordered a potter's wheel. And all these things.
You have.
What the fuck are you? You're even he but, can work double duty,
yeah,
baby.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking. Exactly. So, yeah, it's just... it was just a real sort of eye-opener to see how things are done. And I don't mean to sound, big-headed about it, but it was sort of surprisingly easy to do, you know? I'm sure now there's not the intricacies are probably very, very difficult. But the actual basics, we picked it up quite quickly. And that probably down to Matt being such a great teacher. But, just lots and lots of fun. And Amy's into it just as much as I am as well, which is cool. So yeah, chop and clay could be a thing. Who knows?
I was about to ask you what the name of the company is going to be. I already have an idea.
Yeah, chop and clay, Amy was saying.
What about crack?
Chop and crack. Yeah, but honestly, have you ever done it? Done any sort of throw-in on a wheel?
No, I haven't.
It's real good fun. Mareko, have you?
In high school, a long time ago. I spent 40 minutes trying it out, and I couldn't get it to go. It'd probably be different today, but I'd be interested in trying it again for sure.
I would imagine a lot of knife makers would be good at it because it's all sort of...
all watch YouTube videos?
yeah. But it's all sort of hand skills, you know? We spend a lot of time on the grinder and these tiny little movements can make a difference. And it's exactly the same on a wheel. Just to think of things almost like a lathe as well, Things are turning and the direction you come in at makes a big difference on that. But... lots and lots of fun, honestly. It was great. So we managed to make a few things each, like a breakfast set of like a plate, a bowl, and a cup. Both of us did. And we leave them there now to be fired in the kiln. And we pick them up in sort of 4 weeks' time. So, yeah, once we pick them up, I'll send pictures of the finished articles. But if anybody hasn't done it, I really recommend it. It's really, really good fun.
Is the plan now that you're going to do all your play settings?
Oh, wouldn't that be great? I don't think they'd fit in my even heat, to be honest with you.
Let's face it. I mean, you're obviously going to get a potter's kiln. I mean, what are you going to do with that fucking potter's wheel? Sit on it and rotate?
I'll speak to Spence, see what we can do.
I mean, sit on it and rotate. I'm sure you get a cheap... One of your French guys got a potter's kiln around there somewhere.
I'll register platetalk.com now.
Plate talk. Dude, that's what you got to call this episode. Plate talk.
You know what? I'm making a note. Plate talk.
I'm ready to change it up. Whatever. I already used to make a joke called shovel talk. I don't care. We can talk plates.
Exactly. Yeah. But seriously, if you get the opportunity to do it. Like, take the class. It's so much fun. So much fun.
That would be fun. Now that I think about it, I think Hillary and I would like to enjoy. We would enjoy something like that. We'll see. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. And you haven't got to take your top off or listen to
Easy.
Ghost. You haven't got to. I mean, we did, but it's not compulsory.
Were you Swayze and Demi Moore?
I was the Swayze. Yeah, yeah.
Well, so now
it'd be awkward if Amy took a top off and I.
So now the whole idea is you're going to be able to make table settings and the plates too.
Exactly. I mean, speaking to Matt, who the ceramicist, I think they call them, he supplies a lot of restaurants and all that kind of thing. And I explained, with the knives that doing a similar thing. And yeah, we really got on as well. I think he may be interested in starting a podcast as well, by the sounds of things.
Here comes Plate Talk, ladies and gentlemen.
Here comes Plate Talk.
You can do an episode of Plate Talk in 5 minutes. I mean, all you got to do is do it on this. You can do Plate Talk. You should have him on, do an episode. We'll take the week off and you Plate Talk.
But no, honestly, lots and lots of fun. Yeah, if you can get the opportunity, go and do that. That's all. It's like consumed my week, really, you know.
Wow.
It's what was a 2-3 hour course has turned into probably dozens and dozens of hours of YouTube videos and all that kind of stuff.
You've become a utensil man. You've started out with the spoons.
Utensil man. That's the worst superhero ever. Did I get a cape?
All the plate settings and the knives and then now the plates. I know the plate isn't a utensil. I couldn't figure out the whole thing. I mean, you're really...
This sounds like a job for utensil man.
You're utensil man. You figured it out. Jeez.
Anyway, that was my week. Jeff, what's been going on in your world?
Getting a lot of stuff done and out the door. A lot of great stuff for Christmas orders. Some have already gone out the door, and we're kind of loading some new stuff up. And we're working with got the first look at the first draft of the website, and I love it. It looks really good. I'm really happy with how the designer's designing it. He's got some ways to go get another meeting at some point, but I'm really happy with the first decisions he made. So it was really, really cool. But I had an interesting conversation today. I thought it'd be interesting for a topic. I don't know if you guys know. I don't know if you met him, Mareko, but his name, guy by the name of Jeff Dotterman. He's a great dude. He was at Maker Camp, and he works.
Yeah. From Ohio, right?
From Ohio. And he works with a nonprofit called The Warrior's Way, and they do a lot of knife making stuff and stuff for veterans, and he's just a great guy. So he had something on his Instagram. He made a train spike chef knife, very similar to, not similar, but kind of in the vein of like what Josh Prince just did.
Yeah.
And he was really happy with it, really proud of it, and then he broke it. He snapped it. He put a picture on it, and he said, and he wrote, "I had a problem with the. I made. Here's the mistakes I made, and here, you know, I'm really. This is really upsetting because I really did a nice job and whatever." And he was saying, he said, "I guess I shouldn't have used that carbide hammer to straighten the warp." Mm. So a lot of people were, you know, and I think he offered people to say, "What do you think? You know, I should do it." You know, talk about madness. I mean, you're asking a bunch of mental patients for to diagnose my problems is crazy. So I sent him a message, and we had a nice conversation. And he said to me, he's like, "I guess I should have shim tempered." Now, it was interesting because we were talking about the carbide hammer, and what I had said, and I have a carbide hammer I got from our Australian friends from Corin sent me one, and really I love it. And then I know Kyle Daly sells carbide straightening hammers, and it feels as though there's this, it's just the magic wand. And when people talk about, does a carbide straightening hammer work? People just automatically say this thing is like, you know, it's like a magic wand. You just wave it over the thing and then it takes all your warps out. Mm. We had a nice long conversation about what happened. And what I've noticed with carbide straightening hammers, and see what you guys think, is I had cracked one knife with a carbide straightening hammer. And the reason why is because it was already at full thinness. It was all the distal taper was put in. It was already heat treated. It was already ground. And it was the same size. And I thought maybe I can use this carbide straightening hammer to fix a little bit of a warp. Mm. And I think he did the same thing. He wanted a forged finish and stuff like that. And we were talking about it. And I was saying, and this is my opinion, I feel as though the carbide straightening hammers are really great for full thickness stock removal knives. But when it comes to forged, fully forged with a distal taper, with the bevel forged in, with no real room for error, when you hit it with the carbide straightening hammer, it just, there's nowhere for the fucking steel to go. You know, you have to remove the material. But I told him in my experience that those carbide straightening hammers are not good if you have a finished to profile, finished to ground knife. What do you think?
Finished to profile. Oh, okay.
Like, you know, like you're done. All you do is hand sand.
All you got to do is hand sand.
Yeah.
I've never used one,
but just see, you know, you've talked about these in the past. And I think if I were to use one, I think I'd be doing it with sort of gritted teeth and sort of half looking away and thinking, oh no, it's gonna ping. It just seems without heat, it just seems as if it would always be risky to me, you know. But
Yeah, I mean, and because the faces are so hard, like, I actually think that's why they also, I think Corin offers the ones without the handles, so that you're just holding it by hand and just kind of hammer fisting the blade with a carbide hammerhead in your hand, is so that you don't have all that extra mechanical leverage of the handle that's attached to the head, because I have also done some straightening on thin blades and ended up with like pock marks that are going through to like the other side of the blade. Now, I will say that I have done some straightening using the carbide hammer on blades while I was like in the middle of S grinding. But it was a tenuous situation, I think. But I do think it benefits the material when it's closer to its finished shape, because it's because of the carbide deformation that's occurring is so superficial. It's very easy to grind right through that, and then all that is lost. And so you have to kind of like go back in and correct it again. But if it is a Damascus blade, it can affect the appearance of and the etch of the Damascus. Versus if it's a mono steel that's going to end up with a nice like satin 800 grit finish, hand sanded finish, that's less of a concern. But if you're going to do any kind of etching, it could mess with, especially with the black portion of the Damascus pattern and how that pattern portion of the pattern actually presents. And you can see just like these little spots where you had been hammering. So those are things to definitely take into consideration. But again, I have done it while doing the finishing grinding and doing it close to where the blade was closer to its finished dimension.
Close, but not finished, because you still have to
Not
take out
finished.
those dings.
Right. Well, and so I actually was, I either choked up on the handle or I was just holding it by the head and hitting it. So I wasn't really like, again, using that mechanical leverage of the handle to the head relationship and really papping it, you know, really hard. I was kind of dulling it down, but still getting the effect that I wanted.
If go ahead.
I was just going to say one last thing is the one big key for that to work properly and effectively is to make sure also underneath that the portion of the anvil that you're working on is nice and smooth and flat and doesn't have any too many dings, dents, or dips in it, because you want that response of the anvil being right in contact with the material underneath it. Otherwise, that can also, I could see that causing some potential cracking or breaking issues.
Yeah, there's no direct support underneath.
Right, exactly.
But what you said, which is important, is the fact that that's not the last thing you do. Like, you don't use the carbide straightening hammer and then go straight to hand sanding. I mean, because you're going to get little dings. Now, when I use it, and I don't hit hard. I just kind of flick it, like
Sure.
tap it. And then I'm surprised at how much it works. And then there's a good video. Kyle Daly did a video, and he basically explains that, especially, but for stock removal, full flat grind, a full flat thickness, enough full flat thickness, regular thickness. And if it works great because you're already going to grind off those dings anyway. So you can go to town, and generally speaking, it's pretty hard. If you've got like a 16th inch or a 3/32nd inch piece of steel or even eighth inch steel, it's going to be hard to crack it, especially if it's, you know, if it's completely, you know, hardened. It was interesting conversation because I said that a lot of times I think that whenever you use it, you have to understand that whatever you do, you are going to have to rem whatever you do, you're going to have to remove those dings. So if you wanted like a forged finish, you probably don't want to use to straighten. You probably don't want to use the carbide hammer because you're going to have different marks than the forged marks. And I was saying that there's all these different ideas, and he was talking about, you know, the way he was normalizing all this stuff. The shim temper is very underrated. And what I said to him was, in a situation like that, shim tempering is always the safer bet, because you can temper as long as your next tempers are at the same temperature or lower than your final temper temperature. You can do a few times. Like, you can temper it a few times to get that straightness back. But it was interesting because we were having this real conversation, and I think that he was getting a lot of messaging that was completely different, and just saying that, you know, it really wasn't about the carbide, but it was more about something else. But I just thought it would be an interesting topic of conversation.
Yeah, I said, having never used one, it would make me very nervous using one, simply because you're doing it cold. But you know, if you've never used one, you don't know what a carbide hammer is. Do you know who sells them?
Who?
MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Of course, Lauren sells them. He sells everything. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. One-stop shop for knife makers. Steel belts, handle materials, tools, forges, carbide hammers, kilns, and more. Yeah, 10% off belts and a 10-pack as well, with no code at all needed. He's the man. Head on over to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They're also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Go give him a follow. He's always got new stuff and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, get in there. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
Why don't we hit some questions?
Should we? Let's do it. Okay. I've had a quick look through at these questions, and a lot of these are quite Morocco heavy. So, Jeff, do you want to start with one from Morocco?
Well, the first one isn't. The first one's for all of us. I thought
the first isn't. Yeah, you're right.
The first couple. Yeah. So, if you wanna submit your questions to Knife Talk, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and you can interact with the show there. You can DM us your questions, your feedback, or whatever. This first one comes up from MRC Customs, which we used, I thought only a couple of months ago we thought it was Mr. Customs, which I'm not mad about either, but it's MRC Customs. He says, "What's up, boys? What ramp rate do you guys set your kiln to? My impatient ass sets mine to maximum, and I've spent a lot of additional money on electricity. What is a good balance for heat up speed and electricity usage? As always, your guidance is invaluable." So if you're listening to this and wondering what ramp rate is, if you're using a kiln, it not only asks for the temperature you're looking for, but it gives you an opportunity to do a ramp rate, which is how fast it gets to that temperature.
Yeah. I mean, typically, I would have thought ramps would be to set temperatures at various steps. I've never really thought about as in electricity usage, and I don't think there'd be a difference because you're going to use the same amount of kilowatts to get to a temperature. I would have thought max would be more efficient, to be honest with you, because all that energy being used to generate heat, you're not holding it halfway. It's hard to explain.
I'm I have my shoulders up, my hands up in the air. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean,
plate
okay.
Talk, I don't know.
I mean, when I'm doing ceramics in my kiln, what I tend to do. You use kilowatts, electricity, which then turns into heat through your little springs. What are they called?
Coils.
Exactly. And they'll use so many kilowatts per degree, for example, or per 10 degrees. So to get to your maximum temperature, whether you're doing it slowly or fast, surely it's going to use the same amount of electricity. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, that's physics, surely.
What do you think, Morocco?
I think if I'm heating up to austenitize my blades before doing a final quench, I have it at max. But I would be curious to know what the actual maximum, because I think if you blast it up to whatever the highest temperature it can hold or speed wise, I don't know if it actually is heating at that speed or not. That's a good question for Spencer. I should try to get a hold of him and figure that out. But I have it mindset at max. But yeah, it still takes like to get up to my austenizing temperature, like 1500 degrees, is still like half an hour, 45 minutes.
For me, I always do maximum rate 9999. Yeah. And what's interesting to me is the idea of like the electricity usage. I don't think of the electricity usage as much as am I being as efficient as possible with the kiln. So when we do heat treating, because I also have to deal with how much liquid nitrogen I have, and that I don't do one knife. So if I'm going to heat treat, I know that we're going to heat treat at least 12 knives. Like maybe we'll do one round of four just because I'm in a rush. But when I do the heat treat segment or session, I want to do at least three cycles at a four, and then I know that I'm being as efficient as possible with the heat up and the cool down. In regards to the ramp time, I thought that my opinion is, I'm sure that there are some steels that like a very slow ramp rate, but I also know that like if you're doing annealing, it's nice to let it slowly cool down as opposed to very quickly. So there are some opportunities to change your ramp rate if you're going in reverse, like if you're bringing it up to a certain temperature and you're holding it for a certain amount of time and then you want it to kind of go down to a small, lower temperature, you can change the ramp rate to slowly get it to the temperature that you want. Now, but in the regards to electrical usage, I know that the 110 was definitely working harder, and I felt back in the day when I was only using the 110 machine, I think that I was spending a lot more on electricity than I am with the 220.
Yeah.
But I just try to be as efficient as possible in regards to when I'm heat treating. It's a heat treating day, and then I'm doing at least 12 knives.
Yeah. One thing I would say with, you know, ramping at full temperature, let's say you set at, you know, your max temp, you set straight there. There is a chance you're using slightly more electricity because there's more chance you may overshoot, which would then be wasted electricity. Whereas if you're ramping up slowly, there's less chance of overshooting that temperature. So I suppose that there's that to think of. But I would have thought with regards to actual electricity usage, you know, a kilowatt's a kilowatt. No matter how you get there, it's going to cost you the same, surely.
Well, I will say, I do think the ramp rates do play, like when you plug that into the computer, that does play a role in how much electricity is being drawn. Because, you know, when you're ramping at max, 9999, then it, like, those coils are glowing, right? But if I have it dialed back to, say, like 1200 degrees an hour, they're not the coils aren't heating up to that same temperature, which to me tells me they're not drawing as much electrical power because I have that.
They're drawing less power, but they're drawing for longer, you know?
Well, and so that's for like when I'm doing my tempering, right? So if I want to get up to 375 degrees or 400 degrees in 20 minutes, then I have it set for 1200 degrees an hour, knowing that in about 20 minutes, my kiln's going to be ready at my temperature of 400 degrees. So I'd be curious, actually, I'll have to try this experiment too, is to, if I'm shooting for 1500 degrees for my austenitizing temperature, and that's usually happening in half an hour, if I pull my ramp speed down from maxed out to 3000 an hour, will I still hit that 1500 in half an hour or not? I mean, it seems like if I have it programmed to heat up to 3000 in 1 hour, I should get to 1500 in half an hour still. And I'd be curious to see how that affects the power usage. But then that would require a lot of other shit to be watched and calculated and mathed out. I don't know.
Yeah. And there's other things to consider as well. Like, I mean, Jeff's already said he likes to sort of do as much as he can in the kiln.
Yeah.
Just the amount of mass in the kiln as well. So if you're just putting, for example, one blade, there's less mass in there. It's going to be less stable with regards to temperature as well, which is why some people put extra heat bricks and that kind of thing in, because there's more mass in there. So it'll hold temperature for longer, hence using less electricity. So there's a bunch of things to consider. But it would be good to get one of the Even Heat guys on, wouldn't it?
Let's talk about the technicals.
We've tried, but they're quite shy. They're quite shy.
Spence, you know, isn't that shy.
When I ask the question, every year I ask the question, and it's always, and it goes a little bit quiet. So Spence, if you're listening, come on, get on the show. And if you, the listener, are looking for a kiln, get an Even Heat. I mean, we're talking about you know ovens and kilns and that. We always just talk about Even Heat as if they're the only brand, because really they're the best. Evenheat-kiln.com. Head on over there. They've got every type of model you can think of. Whether you're into plates or knives, they can do it all. Evenheat-kiln.com.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Speaking of which, we were talking maybe a couple episodes ago about using, instead of using foil for heat treatment, to use stuff like the paint on stuff, or I got some Condorsol.
Yeah.
And I got it from Maritime Knife Supply, by the way. If anyone's looking to get it, that's the place to go. And I wanted to get it because it was really, we were talking about the fact that foil has changed, the pricing and the sizing has changed to the point where it's a huge pain in the ass. So Lawrence had sent, listened to the podcast. He said, I got Condorsol. So I bought a, or I looked and I found it on a Maritime Knife Supply. I bought some Condorsol. It came real quick. So I was holding on to it for a while. And we went through all our foil and I was like, I should really look at, you know, how to use this stuff. Maybe there's a YouTube video. And I had seen that Knife Steel Nerds, Laren Thomas, did a whole video on the differences between the Condorsol in terms of, you know, Condorsol and three other materials versus foil, and he did an experiment on what he got in terms of decarb and if something got scale and decarb and all that. And so I'm looking up how to use the Condorsol, and I see and I find one video on how to use Condorsol, and guess who did the video?
Was it a handsome looking chap?
Fucking Plate Knives. Craig Lockwood. Oh, there's fucking Craig's face. I'm like, I wonder how you use this stuff. And I plug in, and there he is. He's using the Condorsol. And I'm like, I'm watching this. Like, this is all hilarious. And I turn to David. I'm like, how hilarious is this? That I'm looking for. I can't escape him.
Just ask me on the show. I mean, come on.
I didn't realize. I didn't even realize you did it. And so we used the Condorsol, and it was a giant mess. But at the same time, the results were pretty good. So I have to, We have to figure out a way to which I did end up getting, I fucking made a huge mess of it. And I was cursing like a fucking crazy person. Ah, damn it. Why did I do this? And I, God damn this stuff. And all, it's all over the place. If I figured out a better way to do it, I'm probably going to use it a little bit more. The fact is there was, it doesn't beat foil. Yeah. Like, it's good, but it doesn't beat foil in terms of like not getting any scale. But my results were in the point where I didn't have a choice. I just had to use it for a batch of knives, and we did get pretty good results. Like the HRC was around the same, like 60, 61, even after tempering and using the Condorsol and taking away some of the decarb. So stuff works pretty good, but it's a lot of mess and cleanup.
Yeah, it's not as quick as foil, but yeah, it's
well,
cheaper.
It's not as good as foil. Foil now has become, this whole stemmed from the fact that foil now is like, you know, it's like $200, $220 shipped for a 20-inch by 50-yard roll, which used to be 24-inch roll, and then all of a sudden it changes how much you can get out of a roll. Like, if we measure out how much foil you need for a knife, all of a sudden you almost lose one. You know, we used to be able to do it so we could get 5 knives per, you know, 16 inches, and now it's 4 knives. So it's just like, I was trying to figure out a way, different ways to do it. So,
okay. Cool. Colbury Knives has also sent us a question. Remember, we're Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got a question, send it over to us. He says, hey, fellas, have a question for you guys, but it's more towards Mr. Fader, Jeffrey. What's your opinion on commercial heat treating options? You all seem to have a well-thought-out position on these types of things, but it seems like using a service would solve all of your cryo and foil problems and save a ton of labour. He says, just curious, as I'm sure you've considered all the options. Thank you for all the great advice over the years. So that was Colbury Knives.
This is for all of us, too. I mean, this is in terms of the reasoning why we do or don't do this kind of thing. Because I know that, Craig, you do send your stuff out to be lit, water jet cut and heat treated, right?
Not so much heat treated. I did at one point, but never really happy with the results. But certainly water jet cut, yes. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had stuff heat treated.
I did. Wasn't very happy with it. So, yeah, I don't so much. Basically, I did it once. Didn't like it and didn't do it again.
Was it Tim?
Fucking Tim.
Deep cut.
There's a callback. It was fucking Tim. And I believe somebody else who listens to the show used him as well, and he wasn't happy with the results either. So, yeah, I don't think it was just me.
But just, ladies and gentlemen, I know that other people are using Tim, and they're having perfectly good results. So Tim's not out of work because Craig and some other guy got rid of him.
Fuck Tim. Fuck Tim.
you're not – somebody else getting fucked by Tim. I know a few people are getting fucked by Tim, but they're not feeling as though they're getting fucked. They're feeling like they're getting made love to.
Oh, right. Okay.
What do you think, Mareko?
I think if you're doing super large numbers, it probably makes sense, especially actually, I don't know. I feel like it seems like it would be something that would be suitable for you based on, I don't know your exact numbers you're doing every month, but, you know, just trying to think of like the cost benefit of doing it in your own shop versus outsourcing it. And of course it would definitely depend on the quality and the consistency of the heat treater. But then trying to think of, okay, if I send it out, where else can I be spending my time that's more important while that shit's happening somewhere else with somebody who's doing a good job? And it would really, honestly, if I was doing higher volume, like if I was doing 20 plus knives, 30 plus knives a month, I might take into consideration working with a heat treater of some sort, because my time is better spent doing other shit. Like if you could train a fucking monkey to heat treat stuff, but at a certain point, it doesn't really make sense to outsource it. It's better to do it just in your shop. But then on the other hand, if you're doing higher volume, I feel like it does make more sense to outsource it, because you have better things to be doing, like the finish grinding and the handle sculpting and the handle assembly and the color selection and stuff like that you're doing for your handles. I think that's where your real touch is important. The heat treat is obviously incredibly important, but again, if the heat treater is doing a good and consistent job, then you can, that's something that you could pass off to somebody. It's like passing off kind of like cutting out the blades. Like, do you do it by hand with a bandsaw or angle grinder, or do you fucking just have them laser jet or water jet? Laser jet.
I think the actual work, the work portion of heat treating isn't that much, you know, regards to time. Yeah. It take a whole day to do a session of heat treating, but
right.
A lot of that is, you know, your wait for ovens to heat up, and so you could be doing all these things anyway. But saying that, I mean, if you're in an area and, you know, you've got one local to you or another maker, firing a couple of times a week, and you think, well, let's do them together. That probably does make sense. But in my case, I mean, I was packaging up a bunch of knives, sending them to, you know, waiting a week, and then they'd send them back to me, and it was a long, long process. But I think if you've got somebody local, and maybe that makes sense. It's one of those questions, isn't it? You know, depends. Which, yeah. I think any question we've got here in the list, you know, it's just say depends.
Well, depends is an awesome answer, but I mean, it's interesting because when I think about it, because I know I talked to two friends of mine who do get their knives water jet cut, heat treated, and ground. It's our Florentine Kitchen Knives and Doghouse Forge. And there was a lot of R&D beforehand in terms of how much they're going to do. And it's a huge investment in terms of getting it right. And sometimes things don't happen right. I mean, I know that I was with a friend who had stuff done, and they weren't getting the HRC that they were asking for. And you could tell. And it was a lot of it was because of the way we were hand sanding. It was just like, dude, this is not whatever you're saying. It's 61 Rockwell. There's no way.
And to think as well, if you're using like a big commercial place to do these, they'll have a minimum order. So you could have 100 knives that are ready for the bin, 200 knives that are ready for the bin, you know, unless you have to.
And that might not be enough. That might not be enough for an order, you know. So that's the other thing. It's like, I know when Mareko, you said 20 knives. All I was thinking of was like, I can do 16 in a day without having to really worry about anything. Like that time is like, it's not just sitting there with a you know, pipe in my mouth waiting for it to hit the austenite, and then it's like plate city. It's like, you know, it's a really very, it's far, for me, heat treating is far more passive because, I mean, we're not really, it's, I'm able to do other things while we're heat treating. I think that it would be great when we get to a point where we're looking for a specific volume. Like when we start to do stuff like we're in the hundreds, then I'll say so. But the other thing is we have so many different models that then you're like, because right now I just sent a message to the New Jersey Steel Baron in regards to getting stuff fulfilled. And I'm thinking, what do we need? And we need this, we need that. I have so many different designs with him that it's just like, well, what do I do? You know, it's like, where, how much am I going to get heat treated, ground, and finished? And is that worth the time and energy? So there's a lot to it. And the other thing is I think what Craig and Mareko both are saying are right. It's a lot of trust in somebody doing the job, and if they don't do a good job, you're going to eat it. Our friend Aaron Goff, he's probably rejected more stuff than he has accepted. And that's a lot. And they're full thickness. So it's like, it's a big commitment in time and energy and creating a relationship with the company. And I'm just like, the thought of it all is not really where I want to be. However, you know, I'm for it when it comes to the point. When it comes to the time, we'll definitely have to, hopefully we'll do that. I'm looking forward to it, frankly, but I'm slightly daunted by it too.
Okay, before we get to the next question, I want to tell everybody about TexasFarrierSupply.com. They've got everything you possibly need, whether you're a farrier, a bladesmith, a knife maker, however you identify, they've got it all. TexasFarrierSupply.com, and they're stockist of Indasa Rhino-Wet, which is the sandpaper of the stars. It's the one that everybody uses because it saves you time, and that means saving you money. If you're not hand sanding with Indasa Rhino-Wet, you've got issues. You've got big, big issues. Head on over to TexasFarrierSupply.com and remember to use Knife Talk 10 at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. TexasFarrierSupply.com.
Nice.
Brigham Kindell sent a question. Mareko, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, Brigham is asking, or he's saying, I have a dilemma that probably isn't a dilemma. I don't make a whole lot of knives, but when I do, I take them to work to work on them. And every time I do, the CEO sees them and wants to buy the knife. He has 7 or 8 of my knives at this point and now wants a Damascus one. Wants the Damascus one I'm making. It's all good, but I feel like I have to give him a steep discount. He doesn't ask for it, but I feel bad, so I do it. So,
couple of things here. You want a discount? You're working on your knife on your boss's time. he's fucking paying for this knife anyway.
Jesus.
Let's face it.
Brim!
Jesus Christ!
You're moonlighting on the job.
He should be free.
He should
be doing these knives.
He should dock you, Brigham, you fucking crackpot. How do you not? You know what? Goddamn, thank God for Plate Talk, because Craig, I would never pick that up. I didn't even dawn on me. You're working on your boss's time, Brigham, and then you don't want to give him you should give it to him for free, for
Christ's
sakes.
Well, that's probably why he says he feels bad, so he does it.
Well, so you should.
I feel bad that I was working on this fucking knife during my day.
So you should feel bad.
He feels bad because he feels like the guy's bought all these knives. He's got maybe you're the CEO. I don't want to say anything bad about the CEO, but I mean, it's just like, how come this isn't an HR problem?
We have an employee that's bringing knives to work and sanding them. What happens if he stabs
himself
on the job?
He's hand sanding while taking calls.
Yeah. He's got one of them Trojan Horse Forge knife devices.
Yeah, boy.
By his computer.
That's a good one.
And he's
just dust everywhere.
WD-40 all over the office. He's got the Rhino wet strips everywhere.
Can you imagine if he had the grinder in there too?
The cast of the office is just like, what are you doing?
Brilliant. Well, if you can get away with it, great. And if you can charge him full rate, even better.
Oh, but, yeah, now, but now. Man. At first I thought, what's the big deal? Give him a break. Now he fucking double charges. See what happens. Maybe get a raise.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, you want to get a grinder in there. And if you were to get a grinder in your office, what would you get, Mareko?
Well, I'd have to get a Broadbeck because it's like those desks are just at the perfect height for the Broadbeck. Right. And I love the machine. I love the guys. They're all great, and I love hanging out with them. It was great to see them at Maker Camp. I use my Broadbeck every time I'm doing any kind of knife work, especially in my handle sculpting on the deep platen that I helped design with those guys. But it really is the multi-tool of the shop, and it's really impressive, and I really like what these guys are doing to help the community by creating such a great tool for the community. So if you go to if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, make sure you put in Knife Talk 10 when you go to check out, whether you're getting either a full package from them or just you the tool arms from them or any of the other materials that they sell, make sure you're putting in Knife Talk 10 to save yourself 10% at checkout. Again, broadbeckironworks.com, Knife Talk 10 at checkout.
Love Craig, it. Do you think that Brigham is using like the petty cash from the company to buy all this stuff?
Why not? You might as well try it. Why not?
But can we just talk about doing discounts? Because that obviously we're
especially
making
jokes for repeat customers or friends and family. Even
it's interesting because there is that thought of like, you know, somebody's been buying a lot of knives from me, and they're very, you know, supportive of you. But and you part of you is just like, God, the guy's bought so many knives. I should give him some or give him a price off. But he has never asked for. Some people ask, some people don't. What do you guys think about giving people discounts?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that classic thing of a cost per acquisition. So to get a new customer, there's a cost involved, whether that's advertising or the work you're putting in. So if that customer comes back to you, that cost is not involved. So there can be a discount for repeat customers because you're saving money by not spending to get a new cut, if that makes sense.
Right.
I can certainly see that. And I think it's always nice then if you've got a customer who's bought a few knives to be able to offer them something. And I know, Jeff, what you do sometimes, you'll throw extra things in, whether it's a T-shirt or a painting or something as well. I think it's a nice thing. And if you can do that, you have that flexibility in your pricing. I think it's a really good thing.
Well, I think you brought up a good point, but in regard to that cost of acquisition being factored in the pricing. But again, like I think a lot of us, I know I never really thought about that when it came to the pricing of things and building in like the cost of the marketing and shit like that. Even the shipping sometimes, I don't really like take that in consideration. And so I think if somebody's going to do that, hopefully they've had that factored in. But I, especially for somebody who has come back, like you were saying, Craig, and has bought so many knives, I think it doesn't hurt to throw them a little discount, or some sort of extra bonus, some added value for being a return customer. I've definitely done it myself for my knives. Even for people who've only bought one knife, and it's, you know, you just kick a little bit off, but it's kind of something to keep people happy. It keeps them happy about talking about the knife. So maybe that they, you know, talk to other people. Hopefully they're not like, oh, just mention my name and you get it 10% off at checkout. But, I think the same thing goes for family and friends. I'm sure we've all had people who are like, oh, do you have a friends and family discount? And I think we have something figured. I can't even actually remember what it is, but
the people who use the word friends and family discount are scum because that's not the first time they use it is on you.
Right.
They use that shit all the time. And there's some people, when they use specific wording that, you know, they've used it before, they're trying to get you. And those are the type of people that you got to be wary of. But Were you done? I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No. I think that's totally fair because it is kind of in a way they're saying, I like what you're doing, but I don't appreciate enough or respect you enough to pay you full price for what you should be getting for this thing.
Well, I don't think that's what the intent. I don't think that's the unconscious. I don't think that's
they're just scum, right?
No, I'm making a joke, but I'm saying that I don't think that when somebody asks for a discount, they're saying, I don't appreciate what you're doing enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's just unconsciously, like when you see a price of something, you think to yourself, maybe there's wiggle room or not, especially when it comes to a knife that's, you know, let's just face it. I mean, over $150 is a lot of money to a lot of people. I mean, it is to me. Like, yeah. I don't like spending $150 if I don't have to. And if there was a way to get a discount, you're going to take it. I mean, I just got some combat abrasive stuff, and I definitely put in the promo code KnifeTalk15 and get 15% off. And it is a big difference. So I have customers who have been buying from me for a long time. I got one customer who's been buying from me since I started, bought my first knives. He buys from me all the time. And recently, I mean, to the point where every year I can count on him for, you know, some money, some business. And the last time he needed something for a gift, and he says, I love this knife. Is that the best price you can do? And I factored in the fact that he's been with me for a long time. I'm going to get him for a long time. I give good customer service, but I want to make sure that when he thinks about getting a gift, I'm on the tip of his, you know, the list, you know.
Yeah.
You know, swinging him, you know, free shipping and 10% off is not a big deal. And it's worth it because I know that he's going to, you know, be like, yeah, Jeff took care of me. And sure. I think that's the same way with all of our sponsors, too, who give pricing off. They think to them, you know, it's a way to kind of, you know, give a little something back to the people. And I think that discounts are great. I also, once again, I feel as though, and this is different stages in people's lives, you know, Brigham obviously doesn't do this for a living. I mean, maybe he does now. He does. He's getting paid.
His biggest earner.
He's getting paid. He's getting paid to make knives, basically. So basically, your CEO. Oh, you know, you're making your knives for the CEO owns your company. I think. I don't know what the hell's going on.
I don't know what Brigham does day to day. But I mean, what would be the ideal job where you could be making knives? Whilst I'm trying to think what you could be doing. I mean,
well, it's got to be like
you're certainly not a postman, you know.
Let's just picture, and we're saying this with deep love and respect, Bingo. We are with you. But if he had a headset on and he was doing phone calls, you're in biz, right?
That's the best.
You're in biz. Yeah. I mean, your hands aren't doing nothing.
Yeah,
you know, hey
help
Siri.
You.
You say, "Hey Siri." Oh, sorry, I just turned on fucking Siri. You say, "Call so and so and such," and you know, and then you're just, and then when they're on the phone, they're saying, "Why are you so out of breath?" Oh, I'm just trying to get these J hooks out.
What are you wearing?
Good brilliant. Old Bingo Kindell, you're the man.
And actually, Brigham, he was on mentioning Dharma Steel as well. So he's currently making a Dharma Steel knife. If you haven't got your Dharma Steel build along photo in yet, you may be too late because this is Thursday we're recording this, and I believe tomorrow is the last day. So by the time you hear this, it probably is too late. But yeah, I'm very excited to see everybody's build along knives. The Dharma Steel Chef Invitational is, I believe, November 15th?
16th.
16th. That's always a great, great show. We get to see some amazing knives. We get to speak to some amazing makers as well. So head on over to dharmasteel.se. Have a look at Dharma Steel yourself. If you haven't been involved in the build along this year, I'm sure we'll be doing it again. But get yourself some Dharma Steel. It's beautiful, beautiful, stainless Damascus style steel, amazing patterns, super easy to use. And go check out the Chef Invitational when we do that in a couple of weeks, and you'll see some of the amazing knives people are making with Dharma Steel.
And Lawrence Lake still has more of that Drakkar, which is the Dharma Steel stuff, which would be perfect if you wanted to just make a knife. Like, cool. If it's too late for stuff is amazing. The people have been posting images. The steel looks dynamite. And I know that Maritime Knife Supply has some more pieces of it if you wanted to just get a small piece locally.
Okay. Have we got anything apart from questions this week? Have we got any feedback or anything?
We do have some listener feedback, and this is some listener feedback. If you want to, once again, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can give us some listener feedback or dilemmas. I love dilemmas. I love to bring dilemmas back. Thanks to Brigham for sending us the dilemma. The first feedback, actually, now that we're talking about Damascus, comes from our friend Brian Hunt. Somebody was asking how you etch Damasteel, and Brian Hunt says, etching Damasteel in muriatic acid for desired depth, then using gator piss for about 15 to 20 minutes for the final etch, and it makes it darker, darker than the muriatic acid from my limited experience. So if you're using the Damasteel and you want to get it darker, go to damasteel.se and go to their YouTube page because they have a lot of very, very... very explicit information on the best ways to finish your Damasteel. Cool. This one comes from Eric Carnivale. Eric Carnivale says, thanks for the shout-out. It was really cool. We talked about him last week from Rhode Island. Oh, yeah. Props to Mareko for giving Rhode Island and the Steel Yards a positive review also. I didn't end up taking his class here in Rhode Island, but it was a bit over my head. I did enjoy his demos at Maker Camp. See you guys at Maker Camp next year. Yeah, Eric Carnivale was... really cool dude. And then this one comes from Adel Knives. Adel Knives says, hey guys, a little listener feedback with a different perspective on the question raised by Hubris Knives last week. And Hubris Knives last week was saying that he got a commission from a boss who wanted to give a lot of knives to employees and their carbon steel. And Hubris was very nervous about how they were going to end up. And he felt like, what is my position? Do you guys remember this question?
Yeah.
All right. So he says, Adel says he's working on a batch of knives that a boss wants to give his employees, but the Hubris is concerned that the recipients won't understand or appreciate how to look after the carbon steel blade. My immediately thought is that if my boss gave me a gift that was clearly a handmade item, clearly they'd been spent a good chunk of money on it, clearly something thoughtful and meaningful, then if I fucked it up by not reading the care instructions, I wouldn't tell a soul. Imagine the conversation. Hi, boss. Remember spending loads of money on a really thoughtful and finely crafted unique item for me? Yeah, well, I can't be arsed to read the care instructions, so I destroyed it. Your money is wasted. I think it's good to go. Care instructions make sure the boss is aware of that. Then get a new even heat on an order. But this is a good topic of conversation. We were talking about, we said it last week, but we can kind of like go back a little bit if you want, in regards to, you know, what do you do when a customer, you're afraid that the customer isn't going to take care of it the way you'd want it taken care of?
Hmm. Yeah, it's difficult. And like you said last week, all you can do really is that upfront work of that sort of education, and whether that is a little booklet or a video, just making sure they're aware of it. And I'd say even to the point, I mean, in this particular case from last week, this guy, you know, he'd already made the order and all the rest of it. But I think if you're speaking to a customer and, you know, they say what they want, let's say they want a carbon steel knife, I think, you know, you can talk to them at that point and make some modification before they place the order. If this is a custom order, you know, you haven't started yet. I think then it's worth, you know, asking, you know, if they use carbon steel before and they're aware of the upkeep of it and that kind of thing. I think that's a conversation to be had before you start making, if it's a custom knife.
What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I would do the same thing. You got to do as much as you can up front to inform them as best as you can. But I think at the same time, you gotta anticipate that every once in a while, you're going to have to get one back and deal with somebody's fuckery or mishandling of stuff. And I do that. Like, I send out the care sheet. I talk about, like, when somebody, when I was doing a lot more custom orders, somebody would send in an inquiry, and then I would talk about the carbon steel and help them understand before we even went any further from there, what was involved with it, that it will develop a patina, all that kind of stuff. And if they want to keep going forward, I've done kind of my due diligence to try to inform them before we've gone forward and made the order. But at the same time, every once in a while you get one back and it's pretty beat up, and I just take care of it. And I think that's all you can do. And thankfully, it's not every knife. Most people do a good job taking care of the knives, but every once in a while somebody doesn't, or somebody's guest doesn't. Like, some people will have a guest visiting and they'll be like, oh, let me clean up your knife. Let me get all this black shit off. And they end up like scrubbing out the Damascus pattern or something like that. And I've had to take care of some
fucking
knives.
Guests do you have?
Not me.
Jesus.
Oh, people. Fucking... Yeah. No, it was like this guy's mom. This guy, the one I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, his mom was visiting, and she's like, "Oh, let me scrub this really clean for you," and she stripped out like all the black in the in the Damascus patterning, and so he sent that back to me to get it refinished and tuned up and shit.
Blamed his mom.
Yeah.
How many? I was going to say
yeah,
that. How many knives have you had come back? When people have said, my wife has done this, or my mum has done this.
I had that. Yeah. I definitely had that.
Definitely. And also, do you do that as well? Like if there's, I mean, the classic example is like tradesmen working at the house and they're, you know, builders or decorators. And always go to them and say, you know, if you're not happy, I say, my wife, she just makes this dinner. It's not me. It's not me. It's her. You know, it's one of those things.
Yeah. It's not a bad move, though. My wife and I have a deal. Like, if there's something that they don't want to do or something, whatever, we've given each other permission to throw the other person under the bus and be like, yeah, this isn't going to play or whatever.
Brilliant.
But no, I've only had a couple people come back and say, oh, this knife got fucked up because of my mother-in-law or my mom or whoever. Most of the people are like, yeah, this thing, I didn't take good care of it. I'm sorry. I'm sending it back. I hope you don't hate me. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'll take care of it. But try to take better care of it in the future.
Coincidentally, last week we're doing something with this local butcher, and it turns out one of the people who works at the butcher shop had worked in a restaurant years ago where the chef had gotten knives from me for the... Mm. For all the cooks, and then when he left, he ended up at this butcher shop. So when we were going to meet with the butcher, the original butcher guy, the butcher that we're dealing with now, says, "Oh, one of my guys has one of your knives." I'm like, "Oh, good, I'll come on up." So we came on up, we had lunch. They have a really nice food, and then the cook came out, and all of a sudden, immediately recognized. I'm like, "Hey, what's going on? Good to see you. How's everything?" And we started chit chatting, and he had the knife with him show me that he had the knife. Soaking wet, number one. I mean, it was like he handed it to me the whole fucking... I mean, it's like he washed it before he saw me, but he didn't dry it off. And I saw it, and I showed it to Tony, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this knife. And I couldn't remember if it was carbon steel or stainless. And I pulled it out of the sheath, and it was like fucking... It was beyond patina. It was rust, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So I was just like, well, why don't you let me take this back to the shop, and then I'll take care of it, and I'll bring it right back. And then he's like, you sure? And I said, is this carbon or stainless? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, okay, I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. So I brought it back to the shop. I cleaned it up. It was clearly carbon. I could tell that it was carbon after, you know, hand sanding it for about 2 seconds. And I cleaned it up, and I fixed it, and I fixed the whole thing. I brought it back the next day. But the funny thing was like he had no idea. I mean, he knew when he got it that it was carbon steel. He knew the how to take care of it, and he still didn't care. And that's just the way it is. And some people, you can tell people till they're blue in the face.
Right.
They just don't – some people just don't care, and you have to kind of be aware of that and be cool with it. And it was a fast fix, and I ended up dropping it off, and he ended up getting, you know, giving us some food and stuff like that, but you know, it's the cost of doing business for good customer service.
Yep.
If you don't want to be a prick, you know, if you don't want to be known as a guy who's like, fuck you didn't take care of it, you're on your own. I mean, that shit is a fucking deep scar on your reputation, trust me.
Don't be the prick. With that, I think that's a good time to end the show. I need to get off. It's Halloween. There's plenty of stuff going on. Thank you all for listening. It's been a good one. Really enjoyed tonight. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. but we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.